As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's not about me. I'm only here for a minute. And I know that I can fix it. I can help even just a little bit. Won't you let me try?
Hello and welcome to the latest Laz and Powers, live on tape from the Athletic Chicago podcast studio, which is my Mazda CX-5. I am joined by Scott Powers. I am Mark Lazarus. We are of the Athletic.
Can you write this car off now?
Ooh, that's a good idea. Maybe I could do that. Maybe like every other payment we can compromise. You know, the company makes every other payment. It wouldn't really make sense to do it in the ring because we're wearing masks for one thing, and they're always playing cheesy '80s music. So I miss the morning skate podcast where you'd have like the dulcet tones of like the morning skates, you know, sticks and skates flashing around. And
yeah,
that was like comforting ambient noise.
Going up to like the second up into the.
Our little lounge there in the rich people section of the United Center. Store. Yeah,
I was trying to think which premium car advertisement was there.
I think it was a Lexus.
Lexus.
It was some kind of car. Yeah. I can't afford. I don't know. But yeah, it was nice to go up there. There was couches up there and stuff, and we could chill out. And then every now and then, like the cleaning people would come by and make a lot of noise or like yell at us to leave, and it was fun. But we are actually at a hockey rink or outside of a hockey rink because training camp has started.
This is day four.
Because Sunday was an off day.
Yeah.
We are 4 days into training camp, and nothing is determined. In fact, I don't think Jeremy Colleton has any idea what his lineup is actually going to look like. Do you think it really does? Because, you and I are looking at this lineup right now, and there are 16, 17 guys that we think are competing for spots. And here he's out there talking about how good Mackenzie Entwistle looks. He wasn't on our list. And all of a sudden, you're like, well, what is this team possibly going to look like on opening day beyond the top six or so?
Well, I wrote this a little bit on the observations the other day, was that I think Colleton even mentioned it today, that he doesn't really know anything until the exhibition games, you know? I think you can tell out who has more skill than before, who's skating better. There are things that you can read into, you know, I think stamina, things that we can see that, you know, but who looks good, in an NHL setting, an NHL game, I don't think anyone knows. Yeah. And I think Colleton even mentioned the exhibition games. And, you know, I wrote about Marco Dano. Marco Dano was center, was beside Taves and Hossa before the first preseason games. And then Dano didn't even make that team out of camp, you know? Even the inter-squad scrimmage tomorrow, there are certain things you can pull, but no one's going out there to hit you.
Well, I mean, if you look at today, you know, they've muddled up the practice units because there's going to be a big scrimmage on Tuesday, an inter-squad scrimmage. So it's not just the good team and the other guys. So you had, you know, Alex DeBrincat and Patrick Kane just barreling in on, you know, Ozapov and some other guys who I'm not sure I've ever heard of before. You know, only you do. I know you know all these guys, but, you know, come on. And it's like, what are you going to learn? What are you going to learn about DeBrincat in that? And what are you going to learn about the young guys in that when, you know, yeah, see if they can, you throw them in the deep end, see if they can swim. And there's something to that. But at the same time, until you're really playing in an NHL game, they're running drills out there.
The only thing, I mean, Colton right now, the focus is enforcing the system and getting the ideas. I think what he can dictate and what does matter with the inter-squad stuff and then the exhibition games is that he can dictate opportunities, you know? Mm-hmm. And Dylan Strome playing with non-offensive players or playing on the fourth line, like, that's going to dictate his opportunity. Lucas Reichel playing with Hagel and Taves, like you say, that's going to, you know, like, that gives you the best chance to make it. I think we've seen that even in the past with, you know, whether it's Colleton or Joel Quenneville, you can see that guys are given opportunities to make the team, and you want to see how they play with certain right. guys. You know, Strome is one of the big talking points of this, where he's gone from, you know, the future number one center, or, you know, like the...
He was on the eighth line today. He was the fourth line of the second group.
So, yeah, it didn't sound like the first and second groups are like, but he's basically on the seventh or eighth line.
But any way you look at it, it's not good for Dylan.
No, it's his and another thing, you and I were talking, and I wish sometimes that we were just being recording, like, our conversations during the practices, but you have a lot of guys who are similar. You have Gaudette, you have Nylander, you have Strome, you have Borgstrom. And of all of those, Strome is the proven commodity, right? Like, he's the guy that who's produced for you.
Yep.
He's the guy that you know playing alongside. Like, Strome has his limitation, but playing alongside DeBrincat or Kane or, you know, high-end players, he can set up and create. And
playing with highly skilled players, that's a rare talent. That's a skill in and of itself, to be able to hang with guys like that. And, you know, we've made some kind of a stink about that Strome needs to be, you know, with, he can't, he's like Artem Anisimov because he needs to be in a specific role to succeed. And I don't know if that's necessarily true. He's a center. You throw a center on a wing, he's going to struggle a little bit. You put him with, you know, grinder type fourth liners, that's just not a natural fit for him. Yeah, he is a mostly one-dimensional offensive player, but he's a proven producer one way. Patrick Kane is a one-way offensive player, but he's really good at it, so you're fine with it. I'm not saying Dylan Strome is on that level, but there's some pedigree there as him being a number three pick overall, and he's proven that he can be a 0.8 points per game kind of guy. That's rarefied air in the NHL, and we don't know if Gaudette can do it. We know that Nylander has not been able to do that yet. Strome is still the young guy. He's 23, 24. I mean, I think we forget about that sometimes. He's on a reasonable contract at $3 million, but they've been trying to trade this guy for a year now.
What's interesting, I don't know what Borgstrom is, right? Like, he's a bit of an X factor here. I think what Colleton is hoping is that Borgstrom is an upgrade over Strome. Like, there's parts of Strome's game that obviously, I think, drive Colleton crazy. Like, there are parts that...
Yeah, his face-offs, his footwork. I mean, he's never going to be a burner.
He's not the center that he wants him to be. And he's not going to be the wing he wants him to be. Like, no. There's... And I think last year that... I mean, some of this is on Strome, too. Like, Strome didn't exactly take advantage of his opportunity last year. And some of it, he was out, and then, you know, Pia Suter emerged. And so there is some of that, you know. Like, Strome's numbers last year weren't good. But he was also being tossed around. Like, there are a lot of different factors in last year. So I don't feel like it's, like, Strome's, like, this definitive, you know. Like, he's not definitively a top six guy. But, like, yeah, I don't know. Like, we've seen enough, at least, how he plays with DeBrincat that makes a lot of sense. And, yeah, I mean, Tyler Johnson could make sense too, but it's throwing, you know, like, it's taking a chance where, yeah, I don't know. I don't know how there's, like, I don't know what the Strome outcome is. Like, is he traded? Is he waived? Is he set? Like,
he's too valuable a commodity to be just be put on waivers.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way they do that unless they would trade him. They tried to trade him at the trade deadline. They tried to trade him this summer. They didn't find a deal that they liked. But there's no way you're going to let a guy like that walk for nothing. So the question, another thing you and I talked about.
It also depends on who, like, it's someone is going to have to be put on waivers.
Yes.
Unless they decide to put Kurashev or Reichel down, which early signs are they think both those guys are good enough to play in the NHL. Like,
Kurashev was on PP2 today.
Yeah. And, you know, like, Reichel being given that opportunity. Like, the preseason games, again, will kind of play out, but somebody, there are multiple guys that are going to have to either be sent to Rockford or put through waivers, and so I think the Strome thing's going to have to come to a head one way or the other, like, toward the end of camp, right?
Well, you know, you and I were talking about this, and it's, you know, you've got, you know, you talk about Gaudette and Strome and Borgstrom and all these fringe guys who have a lot of skill, and it's, you know, it's common NHL practice that you have to have two scoring lines and a checking line and a useless line. That's the old days. And then it became three scoring lines and a checking line.
Yeah.
Do you have to do that? Are the Blackhawks good enough defensively this year with the upgrades with Seth Jones and with Jake McCabe to maybe have four offensive? Wouldn't you rather? I mean, no offense to Ryan Carpenter, Jujhar Khaira. There's a lot of these kind of grinders in the lineup. Wouldn't you rather have guys that can score goals and just say, go fuck it, let's go win 5-4 every game? We'll sell some tickets.
Yeah, and I'm not convinced that, I mean, this isn't how NHL coaches think. You know, they're thinking defense. They're looking to prevent before they're looking to produce, especially.
But Camp's not here. Is that going to be a good defensive line?
Well, no. And then I mean, Camp, that was arguably not a great defensive line at times. I mean, they were on the ice for more goals against than goals for, and that, I think that's a good barometer. And the question is, if you made that an offensive line, would, like, if it was Gaudette, Strome, and Nylander,
like an energy line, almost.
Would you score more goals than you, like, yes, you'd give up goals. Yes. I mean, would you ultimately give up, you know, would you score as many? Like, that would be the barometer.
I mean, are,
like,
you going to be putting up Ryan Carpenter and Jujhar Khaira up against, you know, Connor McDavid's line? I mean, are they, they're not that, just because they're defensive minded doesn't mean that they're a good defensive line.
And removing Kampf changes what that line is. Like, Kampf, I know that fans don't love Kampf, but there were a lot of...
He was, like, effective.
Yeah, like, he was really good in his role. And ultimately, the problem with Kampf was that they didn't produce. Like, Kampf's not good enough offensively, but they drove the puck up the ice enough. Like, they got it out, and they were able to defend. And
they put the next line in a position to score,
yeah,
by flipping the ice.
And their line was often outscored themselves, but that was their part of their own. But that's part of it, too. It's like, unless you're... There's very few defensive lines that produce enough that still don't get outscored. You know, well, like, here, it's how much are you willing to get outscored?
Here's a concern. Like, Tyler Johnson, who's, by the way, a fantastic quote. He spoke for the first time in camp today. And he kind of brought this up. He said, you know, when we were in Tampa, we were playing them 8 times a year. We looked at the Blackhawks and said, okay, this is a good skill team, but they don't have a lot of grit. They don't have a lot of sandpaper. And now that he's here, he wants the Blackhawks to have more grit and sandpaper. And Stan Bowman's always talking about, you know, I want to be tougher to play against. Now, if that means you're just gritty and relentless and, you know, working hard in the corners, that's fine. But if it means we're going to put a bunch of tough guys out there, we're going to be grinding and stuff, that shit doesn't fly in the NHL anymore. No. We are long past, unless it's like the Cal Clutterbuck types of the world, like Casey Cizikas, that Islanders line that everybody always raves about, that can kind of play both ways. There's not room in the NHL for just grinders. Like, you know, Dave Bolin, Michael Frolik, and Marcus Kruger, that line could push the puck up the ice and create chances. Yeah. It wasn't just a grinder line. Grinders are not worth that much in the NHL anymore. You need guys that can score.
Yeah.
And if you have grinders that can't score, I'd rather just go try to score on those shifts. I don't think that necessarily, just because a guy plays a more gritty style doesn't mean he's the right person for that role over a Dylan Strome and an Adam Gaudette. Adam Gaudette belongs in this lineup. He deserves a chance to show what he can do in the NHL. The Hawks acquired him, and he hasn't really had a chance yet. You're just going to get rid of him for, you know, again, I like Ryan Carpenter, but
yeah.
Is Ryan Carpenter was here for his PK abilities, and now you got to bring it and Doc and Taves is back. I don't know if you necessarily need him in the lineup every day.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And I think, you know, when you look at teams, like some, like Vegas has a very good fourth line. And I don't even know if it's necessarily an ability to score. I think it's ability to drive possession and leave your next line in a better spot. Like the nice thing about Kruger's line was that Kruger didn't score, but what he'd do is he'd put the puck on net and then
they get off the ice
and then you
here
know,
comes
then,
Patrick Kane.
And then you take an offensive, you know, zone faceoff. And I think that's the key, is that you put him in a better position with it. And I look at DeBrincat's progression. I look at what Hagel can do on the forecheck. I think guys like Reichel, I think that's what you want to be hard to play against, is where that you're creating turnovers. And certainly you want to stop in the D zone, and some of that's on everyone, especially, you know, kind of when they're playing man-to-man, at least at points. But I do think the defensive upgrade, I think McCabe and Jones are certainly upgrades from Zadorov and Keith. And
don't forget Fleury.
Yeah, and having better goaltending, and I think, you know, Lincoln is going to benefit from getting, you know, just being, both those guys will probably benefit from fewer starts, that type of thing. So, yeah, I think defensively they're so much better. And I don't know. I think Calder isn't going to have a difficult decision, because I think he had an idea of how he wants this team to play, and certainly Kyra and Carpenter fit into that. But, yeah, I don't know if it
makes
sense.
But are they among your 12 best forwards?
Yeah.
When the name of the game is outscoring the other team, I'm just not sure.
No, I
maybe they are. I mean, it's very possible that Gaudette isn't more than what we've seen. It's very possible that Strome is too one dimensional. Like, this is what has to be figured out over these next couple of weeks here before the season opens. But I feel like it's almost ruled out of hand, the idea of having somewhat offensive minded players on your fourth line. And I think the way the NHL is going towards speed and skill and scoring goals, it's time to get past the idea that you have to have a grinder line. That, you know, if you're playing on a team with a really defensive style, yeah, maybe that suits you. But Jeremy Colliton's system is predicated on transition offense, getting the puck out of the zone and up to the forwards, and having guys that can't do anything with the puck on their stick. It's why Nikita Zadorov's not here anymore. You know, maybe at some point you just need this system needs guys that can move the puck.
Yeah.
And aren't just grinders, whatever that even means. All right, let's talk about the top line, because I don't think anybody saw Tyler Johnson as 1C on this team. Not only is he 1C, he's right in the middle of PP1 also.
The thing is, I'm not even thinking of it as a top line. I guess I'm almost thinking back to, like, I mean, the centers who have played with Kane are, you know, Richards and Hanzus, and, like, it depends on
everybody that's ever been in the organization has played center.
Yeah, like, so I guess from that standpoint, like, I know that Johnson's getting all his attention as being the top center. I just wonder, I think it's going to be a line that starts in the offensive zone a lot. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're going to get many defensive zone faceoffs. Like, I think having Taves there, I think two factors that make me think that Johnson is more the three center still, is that I think it's a line they want to start in the offensive zone. I think the fact that Taves is back, it changes the faceoffs. And I think they still want Kirby Dach to get a lot of 5-on-5 ice time. So I'm curious to see what that Dach line looks like, because we've yet to see. Like, we get to.
Yeah, he's been changing partners almost.
Yeah,
every
like
day.
We don't know what that line is, but I think they want Dach to play a lot of ice time. So, again, maybe it's a fourth line that barely plays, you know? Like,
it could be that
like
too,
considering
yeah.
that you're going to want Kane and DeBrincat on the ice all the time. If Taves is up to speed, you certainly want him taking a lot of faceoffs and on the ice. And then Dach, like, his development is essential for him to be back on the ice a lot this year. Like, ultimately, you have three lines that you can play pretty consistently, where that fourth line. Maybe, but again, it's like, I don't know if this is a stopping line. This is not a line that you start in the defensive zone and necessarily it's going to say it's going to create you better possession. So, but I'm curious, like there are a lot of skeptics on whether Tyler Johnson consistently, whether he has enough in the tank, you know,
well,
like
you had a source that basically said he was completely out, completely yeah. washed basically.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know if that's fair either. Like, I mean, Tyler Johnson obviously skates pretty well.
He's a four-time 20-goal scorer. Yeah. He talked today how, you know, I'm always fascinated by the dynamic of playing center for Patrick Kane, because Patrick Kane is unlike almost any winger in the game, where he's basically the center just along the wall. He carries the puck up the ice. He makes all the decisions. He doesn't need hand-holding. He doesn't need support. He's going to make something happen. You have to think the game the way it is. It's one of the reasons he cycles through so many centers, and it's one of the reasons he can play with so many centers, because he can do it himself. And I asked Tyler Johnson that today, and he goes, yeah, I play with Nikita Kucherov, remember? It's like, oh yeah, that's one of those guys that one of the few guys that plays like Patrick Kane. Yeah. He can do that. So he's an interesting option there. I mean, historically speaking, we used to get in trouble with this during the glory years, was no matter what line Jonathan Toews was on, we called that the top line. And Patrick Kane was always looking for the second line center. And Kane himself would call looking for a second line center. So he accepted the fact that Toews was always 1C. And now we're not sure if that's the case anymore. After a year away where Kane was the number one line, you know, to me, DeBrincat and Kane, you could put me in between them and that's your top line. That's two good wingers that, you know, I'm not going to do a whole lot, but they can carry the play.
I think a lot of it's about the utilization, right? Like, that line's not going to start that often in the defensive zone.
You know, ideally, a line with Toews and Hagel and, you know, Reichel or whoever's going to wind up, Kubalik probably on there, they can play a much more well-rounded game.
Yeah. And Doc, I think ultimately, like, it's... Like Toews defensively wasn't great the last time we saw him, you know?
Last couple of years.
I think Doc is going to... I think they expect Doc to really... Like, Doc understands Colleton's system pretty well. He plays in it pretty well. I think he's a big key to what they do defensively, too, in this, you know. And it's curious, because right now they have him playing with a lot of offensive-minded players, too, you know. Like, I don't know. Like, I feel like they have more pieces than they've ever had, at least since Colleton's been here. But they don't exactly, you know. Like, there's a lot of meshing that still has to go on to where they fit. And I think Reichel's going to make this interesting. I do think Kirschev plays a little bit more of a two-way game, so maybe he makes sense for that, too. So...
Well, if they were wise, they also would be limiting Toews' minutes anyway. He should be playing 15 to 17 minutes, especially early on.
Yeah.
And that would allow, you know, whatever line Doc is on to get more minutes. I mean, if you have it pretty evenly spread between the Kane line, the Toews line, and the Doc line, then all of a sudden you've got pretty good balance in your lineup. You've got some depth. And if, you know, everyone's playing 15 to 17 minutes and Kane's playing 21, you know, that's probably the formula for success.
Yeah. And I think, and part of it's, I mean, if Toews is playing on the PP1, that... I don't know if you can pull back on him on the penalty kill. It depends on faceoff.
Yeah, I'm fascinated. I wrote about this last week, but I'm fascinated to see just how heavily Colleton will lean on Toews if in fact Toews is an everyday player again, because you don't know how his body's going to respond to back-to-backs, to 3 and 4. You know, I firmly believe you should be sitting these guys and resting them and saving them for the long haul, but that's just not how it's done in hockey. And you know, this is a team that really can't afford to take too many nights off, so you don't know how that's gonna work. But if you can kind of limit his minutes in other ways, if DeBrincat and Doc can take on the bulk of the PK time away from Toews, and he's in your third rotation instead of your first rotation, that's a couple of minutes a night. If, you know, the power play one would play 2 minutes almost every time. The PP2 hardly ever saw the ice last year because Kane would just stay out there forever. If you kind of balance that a little bit more and put PP2 out for a minute instead of 30 seconds, there's another couple of minutes off of Toews' time. And you can still utilize him in all the ways you want to, but, you know, limit it to the point where he's not being leaned on too heavily.
It's almost, you know, I've been watching a lot of Premier League and
I'm sorry.
But it's almost as if you had a larger roster, like the Blackhawks would be in a better situation where, like, they have Toews sit a night and bring him Entwistle or, sure. You know, like, there's limitations to what they can do with the roster.
Just because you got one or two extra guys.
Right, and the guys that are, you know, like, guys you want playing in Rockford and guys who are, you know, aren't waiver exempt. Like, it struggles where, you know, ideally you sit Toews and then you give Entwistle or, you know, call to mention Reese Johnson and... You know, not necessarily those guys fit the role, but you have enough depth now that you can shift pieces around and have Reichel play center one time. It's the way that, there's so few guys that can go through waivers that I don't think you have as much roster mobility where you're going to keep a seventh defenseman. And I imagine there's a couple guys on this roster that'll stick because they make sense as a 13th or 14th forward, right. You know?
Yeah, I mean, having Brett Connolly as your 14th forward makes more sense than having Mackenzie Entwistle as your 14th forward because, like you said, you want Entwistle playing major minutes in Rockford. The organization really likes him. He took a big step last year, and he might be a piece in the future. You can't have him sitting every night, but Brett Connolly, who the hell cares? You can sit him every night, and he's just a guy in practice who can sub in once in a while when someone needs a blow.
Yeah. It's interesting. There are a couple of guys that I think that have really taken that step. Where I think Regula's, he's injured now.
Yeah, he looks good.
Regula's look good, and Entwistle. And the fact that Reichel's, you know, I mean, again, you know, Colleton mentioned today at Reichel, and I think Reichel's
better. He's going to have to play himself out of a spot at this point.
Yeah,
it feels like.
Yeah. And again, the preseason games are a different animal, but for him to look that good in Traverse City, which I think in the past has been such a barometer.
That was DeBrincat's big launch.
Yeah, you know, Forsling looked really good there. And there's guys in the past that you could tell that they were a step above everyone. Like, you don't win your spot there, but you catch some attention, and you're kind of given another opportunity because...
Well, that's just it. It's like you said, like, you earn your opportunity based on that tournament, and that's why Lucas Reichel is in the top six a lot to this camp instead of skating with the, you know, Dylan Strome, yeah, for lack of a better word. Speaking of Taze, let's talk about Taze a little bit, because I still feel like, you know, there's so many new names and interesting things that we lose sight of the fact that Jonathan Taze is back. Like, that's a big goddamn deal.
Yeah.
And, you know, I noted today, I mean, 87 minutes into practice, he's still out there. You know, practice was over, more than half the players had left the ice, and he was working on face-offs with Tyler Johnson, and he skates down the other end of the ice, and he's taking one-timers and screwing around. He's got a big smile on his face. I mean, just the mere fact that he can do an 85-minute practice is massive.
Yeah.
That means, you know, the last couple of months that he's been in Chicago all summer working out, you know, he's been building to this, and he does seem like a guy who, if the season started tomorrow, he'd probably be in the lineup. And he's going to, and he's wisely tempering expectations, saying it's just his hope and his plan, not his expectation. But everything we've seen, I mean, they had three grueling practices to start camp.
Yeah.
You know, those long ones with the conditioning skates at the end. They had one day off on Sunday, and he's right back out here with an 85-minute practice. I mean, it's all positive. I mean, there's, you know.
He isn't where I think he probably wants to be.
Oh, sure.
Like, he, you know, you can tell in, especially those, they had some tough practices, and, you know, he was kind of last in sprints. You can tell the endurance isn't exactly there, and that's got to be, you know, again, it's everyone's, you know, kind of has COVID differently, but, like, there's a struggle for a lot of people to get back the endurance. So I think for him to be this far ahead right now, it's got to be...
That's what it feels like. He's ahead of schedule right now, more than I expected him to.
Yeah.
I thought they would be treating him with kid gloves. He'd be, like, doing, like, a half a... Remember when Corey Crawford came back from the concussion a couple years back, and, like, on the first day of camp, like, he would do, like, literally five seconds of sprints or drills around the net, and he'd be on one knee just gasping for breath. Yeah. I honestly, I didn't want to say it, but I honestly was expecting that to be Jonathan Taze. And here he is doing those sprints. He might be in last place, but he's still out there doing them.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
He is way ahead of where I expected him to be.
And there's still a few weeks and start to get some games in. And honestly, some of these practices are probably harder than, you know, than the games, because in the games, you know, you play a minute and then you go sit, you know, like, they're it's definitely...
There's not a lot of standing around time in a training camp.
No. I mean, they're pushing these guys. So, yeah, I think it's all been positive, too. Like, I'd be surprised if Taves wasn't, you know, like, at this point, yeah. I mean, I pretty much think Taves is in the lineup, you know, unless something changes over the coming weeks.
Carlton's certainly planning as such, based on the way he's operating. Beyond that, since we last spoke, our rules, the media access has changed, much to our chagrin. The league issued a memo basically saying that even vaccinated and masked, we had to be 6 feet away from players, which, for the most part, basically made every team say, okay, you can't come in the locker room anymore. And we had been told that we would be back in the locker room. We were all excited about being back in the locker room, and that's been taken away from us. So as of now, it's been all press conference. Like, Kevin Lankinen was, you know, it's the first time we really, most of us have seen Kevin Lankinen, you know, in a long time. And he's like, oh, it's nice to see some, you know, put some faces to names. It's, as we've talked about, like, 90% of this team has no idea who the hell we are. They know our names, but they don't know who we are.
Yeah.
And so it's been good to at least get some kind of even a live press conference is a million times better than a Zoom call, because you can get follow-up questions. You can kind of, like, you know, get the tone of a question and someone's facial expression more, and it's an improvement. But it's not what we had hoped for. The Blackhawks, to their credit, are working. They're trying to figure out a way to get us that access, and a lot of teams are doing that. Like, Lou Lamoriello apparently has just said, all right, Zoom's all year, go to hell. But that's the way he operates. He's a different animal.
Yeah.
Here and in most of the cities we've we have writers just about everywhere, and it sounds like everyone's trying to give us some semblance of the access we once had, so we can do some of the stories that we'd love to do. But it's going to be a challenge for everyone early on, and it's going to be some patience tested. And we'll just have to. I think everyone's kind of pulling on the same rope here, where it's better for the teams, and it's better for the players, and it's better for us if we can tell the stories that we want told.
I think so. I was at Lincoln, and they basically said today, this is just better. He walked out. It was just like, it's just easier.
That's just a press conference.
Yeah, no one likes to do it. I think the Zooms were just, you know, like, they were odd for everyone, and there is more of a just a personal feeling, and just it feels more normal, you know.
Yeah, there's a natural give and take in a personal setting, even in a press conference when it's, you know, the six or seven of us that are here every day.
Yeah,
that you just can't get in a Zoom when you get your one question and your follow up, and then you're muted, and then by the time you ask another question, that whole line of discussion is gone, and you can't expound on anything. Like in a press conference setting, you can build off someone else's question and over an answer, and you can react to things that you just can't do over Zoom. So it's certainly better. And we are going to be traveling. There is going to be some access on the road, and we're gonna do a better job this year than I think we did last year. We did the best we could last year, but it's going to be significantly better this year. But it's still not normal.
Yeah, no,
it's sure. Not normal. It's mostly normal for the players now. Beyond that, but for the most part, we're getting there.
It's no, and honestly, this is, I mean, I always think of just other people who had been dealing with this even longer.
No, we are the most put upon people from COVID. Yeah. Nobody has had it worse than us. We are the true victims here, Scott.
it'll be weird to get on flights again. I haven't flown it. I was supposed to go to Minnesota, I think, right before everything ended. Like, I had the next trip for us.
Yeah, you had I just come back from
the trip. I just booked a flight recently, and I had credits left that I didn't realize today. some Southwest credits. So
no, I remember I the last trip before the pandemic was the Hawks were in Florida, and so I got that trip. And I remember I played a round of golf on my day off, and at the end of the round I was playing with some total strangers. Like, nobody knew what to do because it was like late February, so yeah. We all knew it was coming, so we didn't know if we could shake each other's hands at the end of a round, and we were all confused and shit. And that was my last travel experience before that.
What are you looking forward about traveling again?
Food.
Yeah.
Honestly.
You haven't ate since you've...
I have not eaten at all. No, usually it's the access. Usually it's just players are more relaxed. There's fewer of us in the room. Everyone's in a good mood. There's nothing better than a road practice for a reporter.
Yeah.
Because everyone is relaxed and nobody's in a rush to go anywhere because they don't have anywhere to be. But no, I miss going out to get drinks and a meal with the other writers, the other Chicago writers that travel. And, you know, I got friends in every city now from doing this for 10 years. And I miss that. I miss just being in the different atmospheres in the rink. I mean, being at the game. Like, that was the worst part of this. And again, this is why we're not the victims here. Like, covering games on TV sucks.
Yeah.
It's the worst. You have no feel for the game when you're watching it on TV. You feel like, you know, you're just some hack writing from his couch instead of like, it's like, what am I even doing here? You feel like you're not, you know, should I turn in my paycheck this week? What am I doing? So just being at the games and being in that environment and that atmosphere, I just can't wait to get back to it. Cause even at whatever percentage limited is going to be from full-time normal, it's going to be so good just to kind of have that, you know, that feel again of being in a hockey game and talking to players face-to-face and writing fun stories and hearing the crowd again. I mean, it was all the games we covered last year were at the United Center, and all but two of them had nobody in them.
Yeah.
So just to hear a crowd explode after a goal again, like, you know, as long as everyone is there vaccinated, I'm good. Let's go. Let's do it.
I talked about that segment of our pop culture. Anything you've been watching, listening to, anything...
You know, I started watching Star Wars Visions the other day.
What's that?
It's like a short, limited thing. It's like 7 or 8 episodes of like 15 to 20 minute shows where they basically took like anime, like Disney, which is, this is a very un-Disney thing to do, said, here, you're a very good storyteller / animator. Go tell a Star Wars story that has nothing to do with the Skywalkers.
Oh, really?
But do it in like a cool anime style. Huh. And I'm not like a big anime guy, but it's been, I'm like 5 or 6 episodes in now, and it's cool. It's like these little 15 minute shorts. It's on Disney Plus, yeah. And it's good. It's a nice little palate cleanser. You know, we've been watching like Star Wars Rebels with the kids, and I love Star Wars Rebels. All that was one of the first things I watched at the pandemic was Clone Wars and then Rebels.
Yeah.
And so I really got into that side of things. But Visions is completely different.
I don't know what any of those things are.
Sorry, it's not Irish. It's completely outside. It's completely different.
I just don't have children that fit that age yet.
Yeah, you'll get there. It's more like me trying to force it on the kids, honestly.
Yeah.
Because I was a big Star Wars nerd.
We watch a lot of YouTube these days. A for Adderley is the...
What is it they watch now? Well, my kindergartner loves number blocks and alpha blocks. And let me say, if you have kids that are between like 4 and 5, maybe 6, watch alpha blocks and number blocks on Netflix. Holy crap, my kid got so good at math from watching number blocks. Right. Like, it made a huge difference in her ability to do math and understanding concepts. And, like, they're all, like, 4 minutes long, and they're all British for some reason. I think it was made in Britain. That's probably the reason. But it's really good for little kids.
Nice.
Way better than, like, you know, freaking Caillou. God, I hate that little bastard.
I've been watching a show called Line of Duty.
Okay.
I've been on this UK kick where I told you about the Detectorists last week. Yes. And this one's Line of Duty, which is based in the UK, too. It's got a bunch of Scottish and Irish and different actors. But
it's like Irish? Really?
Cop show that's... I watched almost an episode. I'm the one who puts the baby to sleep still, so I'm up until like 12:30. And during the last feeding, which we watched the Line of Duty, and we almost get through almost have an episode a night. So, that's been the Detectorists and now Line of Duty, and that's been
The next thing I want to tackle. It's on Netflix, and everyone keeps talking about. It's called, I think it's called Dark. I think it's in German with subtitles.
Yeah, it's actually like really good.
Oh, have you seen it?
I haven't got through all of it, but yeah, it's shot really well, too.
I've been on a weird time travel kick lately with some of the stuff I've been reading. And
it's subtitled, but yeah, it's really good.
But yeah, I can read. It's okay.
I'm just giving you a heads up.
So I'm going to try to get into that. I have a list like a mile long that I thought I would get through in the pandemic, and then it just kind of got away from me. Nice. So I have some more stuff that I want to get to. But yeah, check out Star Wars Visions. It'll take you like an hour and a half to watch all of them.
Yeah. I guess we'll start... We'll have some more to talk about next week, at least. We'll have some
preseason
games.
Yeah. And we'll probably be on Tuesday next week,
Tuesday,
right?
Tuesday next week, yeah.
Because you'll be traveling.
Yeah. Secret mission.
Secret special correspondence. special assignment. But yeah, so we'll probably look for us next Tuesday, and we'll have, God, they play 4 games in 6 days, so we'll have plenty to talk about by then.
Yeah.
The team might be set by then.
you got anything else?
No, just keep reading. We got a whole bunch of stories in the hopper that we'll be sprinkling along the next couple of weeks beyond just the daily observations, which everybody loves, and everyone loves those little chunky bits.
Yeah.
But yeah, we got a lot in the works. We're going to be traveling. Make sure you let your athletic subscription auto renew. The whole business model of the future.
Sounds good. For Mark Lazarus, I am Scott Powers, and this is Lazarus and Powers. We'll talk to you soon.
See ya.
And I know that I can't fix it. I can help even just a little bit. Won't you let me try?